someone stationed who collectively worked on the text that was read aloud and the text found in the brochure.
We were here in 1840 and 1870.
Despite broken treaties and forced removals.
This tour comes with three demands to the museum as well as to the city, which are rename the day to Indigenous Peoples Day, remove the statue outside of the museum, which is of President Teddy Roosevelt on a horse. Flanked below him to his left is a mostly unclothed African-American slave, and to his right is a mostly unclothed Native American Indian chief. And lastly, we're here with the demand to the museum and to the city to respect the ancestors.
My name is Elijah London. I'm with my school, and I'm from Bed-Stuy, Brooklyn, New York. We came out here because we wanted to talk about what did Columbus Day truly mean. And when we watched more in depth, we realized that Columbus Day, at the beginning of Columbus Day, was trying to deceive us from the truth and knowing that it's actually a horrible day. I think it's important for us to show up because it's actually showing a way of how that we can spread the truth to others and they won't be deceived at this holiday being so special.
Thanks, everyone.
For me, when I think about this museum, when I look at the statue and when I look at the statue of Columbus or I look at the statue of Dr. J. Marion Sims, I'm thinking of the little black and brown and indigenous kids who are walking around the city, right, who are being told visually over and over again that their lives do not matter. And in 2017, quite frankly, we're not here for it. We've never been here for it. And what we're trying to do here is get people across struggles to stand together, not just this is the statue I want taken down, but these are the statues that we want taken down. And really, for me, it means a lot for our youth and having them grow up in a place themselves, accurate representations of themselves, not something like that's represented in the statue that's behind me.
Special thanks to Democracy Now!'s Andre Lewis. Democracy Now! Produced by Mike Burke, Renee Felst, and Ian Gesder. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. We're joined by Ai Weiwei.
Water heaters set at too high a temperature. Bathwater not checked for the temperature before entry. Boiling water left unattended on the stove. These are all burn dangers to children. Kiwanis Clubs work with safety programs, children's hospitals, and pediatric trauma programs to prevent children's injuries and make sure kids get the best possible treatment when they do get hurt. To learn how to avoid burns and protect your child from other preventable injuries, visit our website at servingchildren.org. Kiwanis International, serving the children of the world.
This is a guided meditation on parenting. Take this time to breathe deeply and close your eyes. Right now, you're completely in control. Unlike the time you and your son played basketball and you attempted to slam dunk. Or when you tried removing those raccoons from the basement. Concentrate on the soothing sound of my voice. Release the memory of when you wrestled with that beehive in your son's treehouse. Let go of the time you thought that skunk was a cat, or when you pulled into the garage with your son's bike on top of the car. Deep breaths. Deep breaths.
You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. There are thousands of teens in foster care who don't need perfection. They need you. For more information on how you can adopt, visit AdoptUSKids.org. A public service announcement from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, AdoptUSKids, and the Ad Council.
Wow. Okay. Yeah, well, you don't have to be perfect to listen to WUSB either, and we strive for imperfection here. WUSB Stony Brook is our name, and it's 6 o'clock time once again for another edition of Off the Wall. And a very good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Wall. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you on this Tuesday evening, joined tonight by Kyle.
Yep.
Well, you know, we were almost late. You know why we were almost late today? It's incredible. There's a flock of geese crossing the street, and everybody had to stop. I love it. I love when nature just says, nah, hold on. You're not going anywhere till I'm finished. We have these geese on campus. They've been here for months. We've watched them over the summer. I don't know what their plans are for the winter. They seem to want to stick around. They've grown up. We've seen them grow up from little, what, goslings is what they're called?
Yes.
And now they're all walking around, and they just spend the day going. I don't know why they even walk around, because grass is grass, but they're going from field to field around the campus, and they all cross the street, and they take their time crossing the street. And there's about 40 of them. You can't honk because, you know, everybody would say, what a jerk honking at geese. They honk, though. So
they honk
that's,
back.
That's interesting, yeah. Too. I didn't even thought of that. But, yeah, so you got to wait. You got to just sit there and wait. And everybody, pedestrians, bicyclists, cars, you name it. So, you know, sometimes when things slow down here at Stony Brook, it's because of the geese. It's something to consider. And if you ever hear dead air, it might be because someone's stuck outside waiting for them to get on with it already.
Yeah.
You know, I love these little mini nature things that we see. Just the other day, we went on safari in one of these little narrow country streets that we have out here. We were driving down, and we saw this cat just kind of crouched on the ground. And, you know, we pulled up next to him, say hi. And he wanted nothing to do with us, just kind of move past us quickly and very low to the ground. And we realized that he was in full hunter mode. And there were chipmunks all over the place, just kind of bounding about, zest for life, all that. Unfortunately, though, they apparently were unaware of this hunting cat that was just kind of, you know, king of the jungle right there. And, we were watching this thing through the rearview mirror. We were watching, you know, okay, this cat's sitting there waiting to catch one of these chipmunks. And then this idiot chipmunk apparently didn't realize the cat was there and ran right towards him. And that cat didn't have anything to do except pretty much catch him with its paw and just trot away triumphantly with a chipmunk in its mouth. But, you know, it was just great watching something like that, completely wild in suburban Long Island, with every ounce of drama as if we were in, you know, deepest Africa watching, you know, a lion hunting a giraffe.
Yeah, it was this, like, deep instinct in action. And as you said, this animal was paying us absolutely no mind.
Didn't want to talk to us.
Wasn't even a factor that we were there, that we were witnessing this. And this cat really wasn't tempted the slightest as this stupid chipmunk was running at it.
Mm-hmm.
And as soon as it was close enough, I mean, at this point, I'd given up. I was like, oh, this cat's going to lose it because this chipmunk's been running straight away and he's not even catching up with him.
Just skipping and dancing all over the place, unaware of the cat.
What do I know?
Uh-huh.
I mean, the cat obviously thought this through and knew you stay still.
Very patient. Very patient. And I was getting impatient, saying, okay, get on with it already, you know.
It was dramatic.
I thought he was going to charge at the chipmunk. I had never expected a chipmunk to charge at the cat.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that was something. And then the other day, you saw some kind of bird of prey that just landed on a tree and was sitting there literally for a half hour just staring.
Yeah, I think it was some form of osprey.
Yeah.
I think there are some down here. There's definitely nests and perches. And I just happened to be glancing in that direction and noticed it. And it's so comforting, like, to see all this life. I think that's what you get when you're on a campus like Stony Brook that's mm-hmm, so mm-hmm. spread out, that's got a lot of open space. Open space is a big deal.
It's not the enemy, folks. It's a good thing.
Yeah, there's a lot of places that have open space, and it's tempting to change it, to want to control it, and all these kinds of things, but it serves a purpose. There's parts of Stony Brook's campus that are vacant, that there aren't, you can't even tell there are people there that have...
It's not vacant, Kyle. It's filled with wildlife.
And that's the point. Yeah, yeah. Absolutely. There's, you know, deer and rabbits and
we
all
have our
kinds
campus,
of animals.
They have their campus.
It's true.
And they're learning in the school of, I was going to say Hard Knocks, but... You know, not for the cat. The cat's got it pretty good because there's all kinds of things they're hunting. And you know, feral cats are really interesting breed to watch. They're not breed, obviously, but, you know, to see the habits and realize, you know, house cats are basically the same animal, but a completely different attitude. It's just incredible that, you know, you could be curled up by a fire or you could be outside in the rain surviving. And I think there's something we can learn from that.
Yeah, nature and nurture and everything in between.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of wild animals, Harvey Weinstein. Wow. This is, you know, I guess I never am surprised by the allegations that come out against people to realize, you know, that they're slime and really, you know, do horrible things. But it's, you know, I'm gratified that at least we're, you know, pointing the finger in the right direction and blaming all of this on Hillary Clinton.
No.
Because, no, if you watch, you got to watch Fox News, Kyle. I keep telling you, you got to watch this channel. It's unbelievable. Yeah, it's Hillary Clinton's fault. You know, this guy went around harassing, you know, actresses and God knows who else. There's even tapes of him doing it. Just one in the long, long list of people that have acted this way. But because she wasn't quick enough in saying something to condemn him, it's all landing on her. I mean, for God's sake, people, she's not even running for anything. Why do we need to hear what she has to say in the first place? You know, they would be the first to say, oh, she's irrelevant. We shouldn't even talk to her. Who cares what she thinks? Except when it's something that you might be able to point the finger and say, oh, you didn't do enough. You know, but there's no indication that she was aware or that Obama was aware that this was going on in the times that he was donating money to their campaign. Oh, the horror. He's donating money to them, and they don't know everything about him. You know, they, in a political campaign, I don't expect them to be able to vet everybody who gives them money. I expect them to vet the people who are in their campaign. You know, it's insane because, yeah, this guy deserves everything that he gets. He's been fired. But the other sexual predator got elected. You know, that's what the other side did. They elected him. And who's condemning that? You know, when the shoe's on the other foot, all of a sudden, responsibility falls anywhere except on the perpetrator. And it's, you know, I'm just getting really fed up with hypocrisy here. You know, it just never ends, no matter what happened. Last week, Hillary Clinton got roundly criticized by the Republicans for saying that we need gun control after the worst massacre in modern U.S. history. You know, it's all about how can we blame this on Hillary Clinton? And nothing, you know, never actually confront the issues, never actually try to solve the problem. It's very infuriating. And I don't know.
Yeah, it's disappointing. Disappointing, but
that's not strong enough a word. Infuriating. I'm going to stick with that.
Sure. Not surprising.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there are other people in Hollywood that I would be more surprised at this coming out. But I'm not saying I know him. I'm with you. I don't know Hollywood. I don't read people or whatever. You know, I'm not plugged into all that, and I don't know him, his personal reputation that extensively. But I'm not, you know, just from a very little I know of his character, he doesn't strike me as someone that's unlikely to have perpetrated something like this. And that's, I think, a lot of why it is sticking. To the point about Hillary and taking money, I think anybody... Do you have the Wikipedia page for every film he's done? Okay, anybody who's gone to see one of those films, you're supporting him. I mean, what about all of our culpability? I mean, the Weinstein...
You didn't vet the guy. What's wrong with you?
Yeah, the Weinstein films. I mean, how many different movies has that been? And really, if that point, which is a lame point, is to go out to its furthest extent, it's campaign finance reform. The structure of it causes politicians to have to raise so much money.
I think, Kyle, he's actually in one of my films. Actually, yeah, the only film I ever made, Freedom Downtime. I think Harvey Weinstein does a walk-on while we're demonstrating outside Miramax in downtown Manhattan. It's one of the Weinstein brothers. I don't know. It might be him.
We'll have to rewatch.
If anybody out there has a copy, I don't know where mine is. But if you just kind of, I think we even slow it down and put a little caption underneath. Is he in our film? And in which case, then the blame is on us as well, because we put him in a movie.
I'll get you a copy. I might be able to find it.
Okay, good. But, I mean, we gave him more publicity.
Yeah, we did.
You know?
So...
And you know, knowing Angelina Jolie, or you know, from Hackers, when she was working on that, that was only a couple of years before she was allegedly harassed by this guy. And that sickens me, because, you know, she was such a sweet kid, you know, to deal with that crap.
Sort of.
To realize so many people have to deal with that crap constantly and just aren't taken seriously. This is where we look at ourselves and how we handle these kinds of situations that haven't stopped. They're still going on. This current day Harvey Weinstein's he was pretty current day up until, I think, last week. But, you know, this kind of thing is going on. It's pervasive everywhere you can think of. And we need to do a better job of listening to the accusers and not making them feel like they're the ones that are going to be prosecuted and hence keeping them quiet so that these things go on literally for decades.
Right, where there's people, like allegations of him paying people off, and it just sort of feeds on itself, and he's keeping this thing away from maybe a family that he's got, sort of unaware of this side hobby. It's a real sickness, and I think, like, the abuse of power and people that like Angelina Jolie at the very beginning, sort of burgeoning their burgeoning career, is met with this hurdle, you know, and so many people have to deal with this kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. Just when they're starting out, whether it's a comment or criticism that's, you know, taken too far, or advances like these allegations.
Right. You know, I just want to know, why are people such sleazebags? Why does this always happen? These are people that have, you know, so much going for them, and yet they still go down this dark path. I guess they feel the power makes them immune. But, you know, it doesn't. It really doesn't. Eventually, allegations are made whether you're alive or dead at the time, and everything that you ever stood for or built is destroyed in the process. I mean, is it, you know, the Anthony Wieners, the Bill Cosbys, who was that TV host in England that you know, after he died, all kinds of horrors were revealed about him. It just seems like there's a never-ending list of people you know, you think would know better. But again, I guess they just feel like they can't be touched.
Yeah, so it's some kind of temptation combined with... you know, this complex of celebrity, I guess, or being having getting away with these kinds of things, and then getting to a certain position where you're able to take advantage of people, but it's difficult, because I think it's not just in, you know, these sort of big cases or with, you know, a particular industry. There's all of these small behaviors and things that people are facing all the time that, it's really hard to put yourself in that position, but you must be aware, like, these things go on, and people get away with them because I think there's like that combination of public and private persona or reputation, and maybe it is a casualty or an effect of privacy that, you know, people can be so private and groom this persona, this idea that people have of them, and manage it so carefully that in reality they're a really horrible person.
Mm-hmm.
But no one would really know, given the orbits or the foundations they donate to, or as has been alleged, campaigns, you know, basically sheltering them with all these good deeds, when in their business and personal life they're just abusing people left and right whenever the opportunity presents itself.
And, you know, our current sitting president has been accused of this kind of thing. But it's, we all know it's very hard to accuse a president of anything to ever be taken seriously. So those kinds of allegations take a back seat. But we have his own words. We have his, a year ago is when that tape surfaced. You hear him saying those horrible things he said about what he can get away with. This is, that's far more than what other perpetrators offer, unless they're caught on tape. So, you know, this is something that particularly annoys me when you see the pundits, you know, going after their political opponents and trying to implicate them somehow in things they had nothing to do with. Whereas you have the guy here who actually said, yeah, I do this. I get away with it because I'm rich and powerful. And you have nothing to say about that. You know, that's really disgusting. And well, we need to keep on this. We need to not let it go because these are his words. These are things that undeniably happened.
The content, the media, the clips are manipulated or flipped around, and it becomes an attack on the media.
Mm-hmm.
The messenger is really, you know, at fault versus actually looking at the behaviors and the transgressions that are occurring.
I love how it's always, you know, we use his words and somehow the media is the one that's at fault. But you said this. Well, you're quoting it wrong. It's a quote. Today he offered to take an IQ test with Rex Tillerson, our oil executive secretary of state, who, you know, I have no respect for either, because I'm damned if an oil executive knows anything about foreign affairs. In this particular case, facing off against Trump, where you know, he allegedly called him an effing moron. And Trump's response is to challenge him to an IQ test. And then to have Sarah Sanders come out today and say that, he was joking. What's the joke in that? You know, it doesn't sound like a joke. It sounds like the typical defensive response anytime somebody has asked a particularly challenging question. And in this particular case, he's very sensitive to anybody criticizing him. And, you know, his own Secretary of State apparently expressing his frustration, not denying it. That's too much for him to keep quiet about as well. So, you know, every time we see the same pattern. So you have to look at the source. You have to look at where these things are coming from and not blame the people who simply are reporting the story.
Yeah, you can say that's funny. You can say he's joking, but he's also cowardly in that he's also getting out of actually taking the IQ test, which in itself is idiotic. It's not a joke.
It just backs up what Tillerson said.
Yeah,
and you know, it's funny. Yeah, we can laugh. And I have to be honest, Kyle. It's almost getting as annoying as Trump himself. The Trump imitators. I am so sick of it. I am so sick of everybody. They all do it the same way. You know, I mean, it used to be SNL pretty much was it. Now everybody does it. It all sounds the same. I'm sick of it. You know, the real thing is pervasive enough. I don't need to hear everybody imitating him as well. We have to do something about him. And imitating him, yeah, it might annoy the hell out of him already, but it's not effective enough because he's still in power.
Yeah, imagine if we had 8 years of Obama impressions the way we have impressions of Trump. Yeah, he's tacky and all of that, but I mean, I think the reality is like you've pointed out, much more a dire or worthy of our attention than the technique or the sort of aesthetic of how he barks at us.
You know, it's not just that he's an overprivileged sexual predator that doesn't know the first thing about anything other than running his stupid businesses. It's that he is entrusted with all kinds of things that, without a keen understanding of how they work, could be disastrous. All right, he's basically dealing with his North Korea situation in the most haphazard way and putting so many people at risk as a result of that. And that's just one instance. As you pick any part of the world, he can make it into a disaster zone, and he can certainly do that here at home as well. It's got nothing to do with left versus right. I will take Pence. I will take this guy who I can't stand either, only because I know he's not going to blow the world up to prove a point. I'll disagree with him on just about everything he says, and I'll be embarrassed that this guy is our president, but I won't be as afraid. I won't be as as worried every day about what this guy is going to do. And I can only hope that inside the powers that run things. I'm sorry, I left my phone on. And someone always calls me right when I'm on. Okay, I'm turning my phone off. Sorry.
You were saying inside the powers.
Inside the powers in Washington. I like to think that there's kind of like a secret society. Not a secret society. That always sounds bad. But, you know, just people that are somewhat sane who won't let him just get away with whatever he feels like getting away.
I think you're talking about the deep swamp.
I don't care what it's called. Yeah, I don't really care.
The deep swamp.
I have to enter a password to turn my phone off.
It's where deep in the swamp, people really trying to orchestrate things. The swamp masters, perhaps, is what you might call them.
Whatever they are, I just hope there's somebody there, line of defense, between him and the button, you know, or anything else that he should not have access to. This guy is dangerous, you know. Yeah, he's a predator as well, but he's also just somebody that should not be in charge of a microwave oven, let alone the nuclear arsenal. So I just hope that we have a strong defense against him. But those are my worries. And again, you know, people who have the knowledge and experience, even if I disagree with them, at least, you know, I know that things are going to go from day to day, not in the way I want them to go, but at least we'll have another day. In this particular case, there is no such guarantee. And we need to, you know, stop with the impersonations and start doing actual things that get him out.
Yeah.
Because that's the only way we're going to be safe.
I get your sense of urgency, but I would say there is a sense of agitation, a sense of tension in the air, palpable, given so much unrest and so many just asinine, just ridiculously, just wrong stuff that has occurred countless times over and over again, and the commentary to boot. It's kind of made, I think, people's imperative to speak out, and I'm talking about all sides. I mean, we have a lot of outspoken Republicans now. Yeah, whatever Corker. They're doing. I mean,
this guy Corker from Tennessee.
True. Yeah. Bob Corker and various people retiring becoming outspoken and speaking their mind. We saw that early on with various lifetime, you know, employees and so on. From the EPA and onward, you know, discussing the transition, which was as continually disappointing and difficult. So, you know, I have hope. I'm optimistic, but I am with you as far as like the overall sense of the time to joke this, you know, this the closeness and resemblance of sketch comedy and real life is not something to allow ourselves to be fooled by. It's too dire. The impact of all of these issues and what the world is looking to us for is too crucial, too important.
Let me just, I'm not saying don't joke, because obviously humor keeps us sane and it annoys the hell out of him. That's a good thing. I'm just saying to use that as the only defense, which a lot of people seem to be doing, that's not going to be effective. We need to actually start moving forward. The worst thing that we can all do is back down, is not keep up a sustained attack. Like we're seeing in the NFL right now. You know, you know that annoyed the hell out of him. Why? Who knows? He just decided to make that an issue. But you know what? He made it an issue. It became more of a talking point. So people could say, this is why I'm kneeling for the national anthem. They doubled down. You know, Pence did that whole orchestrated thing of walking out, which, you know,
storming out,
ridiculous and pre-planned and all that. But it's, you know, it still becomes a talking point. The worst thing that can happen right now, and we're starting to see this, is that the team starts saying, okay, you must stand now, and players start standing. I say, you know, you don't even kneel anymore. You sit down. When you're attacked like that, you have to attack back. And this protest was never against the flag or against what our soldiers have done over the years or any of that. It was very clearly stated that this was about police oppression of people of color. It's pretty simple. I think that's even written down. And for them to twist it and turn it into being anti-patriotic, you know, we kneeled a couple of weeks ago, and I gotta say, it's harder to kneel than it is to stand. And you actually have to think about what you're doing. It's a sign of respect. I mean, in church, it certainly is. So I don't see why people choose to be offended.
Yeah.
It's more like this is a test of their ability to control by saying, no, you must stand. We own you. We're the owners. You're the players. We own you. We say stand, you stand. And if they say, no, we're going to kneel, your authority is being questioned, and they're being treated as individuals. I love how people say, these are multi-million dollar players. They must do what they're told. Why does that make them not human? They can't express themselves. And how is expressing themselves such a danger to everything else? I think that makes us stronger. So what they need to do is keep doing it, and everybody needs to keep doing it. But what we're seeing people say, okay, that's enough. You guys had your fun. Now let's obey the president and do what he says. He is going to win. He is going to be more emboldened and empowered if it goes that way. It'll be like Standing Rock, where they back down as well and everything was lost. We do it time and time again. Gun control, we back down. The time to back down is over. You know, you stand up, you keep pushing. You know he can't take it. You know it bothers the hell out of him. Keeps him up all night long. He tweets all over the place. That means you're winning. That means you're winning the crazier he gets. And let's just hope that he's not crazy and near the nuclear buttons at the same time. But that's not on us.
It's in some ways it is, because we are that buffer. I mean, the people who show up and are emboldened and realize that their voice matters, that they are, you know, in action at these events and so on and so forth. What that does is communicate to other people who might not be as courageous or might not have been on board early on, and then they do it, and that compounds and becomes exponentially more prevalent a message, and that message can be taken to places where we actually address this. And I'm talking about government, state government, city governments. When people who are fans start thinking about this stuff on the way home, and they're talking to their children or their coworkers or friends that they're enjoying this entertainment with, and it becomes the foreground of the conversation with them, they might start thinking of ways they can affect this in their community, how they can really be an advocate against the things this protest is addressing, and really come up with solutions.
Yeah. We need to keep the conversation going, and we cannot be intimidated. And you're seeing all kinds of methods being used to intimidate. That can't be allowed to stand.
You see, it works. I mean, it works.
It does.
This NFL thing got bigger and bigger and bigger, and that's just that I don't want to diminish it in all or oversimplify it, but that's one issue. Mm-hmm. We have a lot of issues at the federal level and internationally.
Yeah.
So take it as a template. Figure out where your allies are and what you'd like to see addressed, and take it to your streets.
Healthcare, it's another issue, and fortunately we didn't back down. I think we could have spoken up more strongly. I think we could have spoken up more strongly at the very beginning when healthcare was first brought to this country. Instead we were nitpicking about all kinds of things instead of realizing that this was going to be fought tooth and nail by the people that wanted all to go away. Fortunately, we fought enough, hard enough to keep those gains from being completely erased. But imagine if we did that to everything. Imagine if we doubled down. Gun control is just one issue, but it really needs to be addressed. And it's terrible that it takes horror like Las Vegas to make that happen. But let's not let that go by. Yes, this is the time to talk about it. Absolutely is the time to talk about it. When you realize that something is completely screwed up and wrong, that's when you try to fix it. Not 6 months down the road, not years away when we aren't even thinking about it. And, we have to start looking at what kind of a culture we have here and what is important to us and what is not important to us. And do we really need to live in a country where you can get 47 guns and it doesn't raise any flags? Nobody is concerned about that. You know, people say it's not the guns. And they're kind of right. They're kind of right about this. It's not the guns. It's the attitude. So it's the attitude that comes with the guns in our country. Places like Canada, places like Switzerland, they have guns. People have guns, and they don't have this. It's because they're not obsessed with guns. They're not collecting 40 guns. They're not collecting semi-automatic and converting them to fully automatic. They're not doing things like that. Yeah, they do target practice. Yes, they defend themselves. Yes, they go hunting. But they don't have this sick culture that we are embracing, that we have been embracing, and it's time for that to stop. And we have enough reasons to say why it's time for that to stop. It's unhealthy. It's killing us. It's a very bad thing to set as a standard. And we need to not let go of those points and not compromise. And, you know, I see Democrats doing this all the time. I see them saying things like, yeah, I'm a firm supporter of the Second Amendment. The Second Amendment has been perverted, all right? The way that you are saying the Second Amendment, you support this. You're basically saying, yeah, what my colleagues on the other side of the aisle are saying bears merit. In that you can own all these guns that our forefathers had absolutely no knowledge of and never could have even dreamed of, and somehow that equates to the Second Amendment. The Second Amendment clearly says well-regulated militia. All right, it's in there. You can't just skip over those words. That's a part of it. And what I see Democrats doing, along with a lot of other people, is going along and skipping over those words and not factoring that into the equation. Yes, you can have guns, you can use guns, you can do various things, but well-regulated militia, sanity, you know, regulation of one sort or another, not no holes barred where you can do anything you want. And that's how we've been living for the last few decades. It's on us as well as it's on the people that promote this for not speaking up enough and not trying to stop this. Do you know, the head of the NRA once said, "I have never believed in the general practice of carrying weapons. I do not believe in the general promiscuous toting of guns. I think it should be sharply restricted and only under licenses." That was Carl T. Frederick, who was the head of the president of the National Rifle Association back in the early 20th century. Used to be a different kind of organization. Used to stand for sanity. Used to stand for, things that we could all kind of agree upon. And then it got hijacked. Got hijacked by ultra-conservatives who turned it into the gun-toting lunatics that they are now. I don't mean to be too harsh there, but there are too many of them in charge. And most people aren't like this. Most people don't want this kind of attitude to be pervasive. They want regulations. I mean, how is it that some guy can buy 33 guns in the last year?
In the last year.
And yes. That didn't raise any flags? You know, no. And they want a society where that won't raise any flags because that's somehow to them is a violation of their rights. It's an insane dialogue. We need to stop. We need to stop with this. Nobody's taking away guns. Nobody is changing the Second Amendment. It's just we're taking the crazy out of what we're doing right now and hopefully making our world a lot safer. And yeah, you know, criminals will get guns. Yes, you can say that. You can say criminals will get drugs. You can say criminals will always engage in human trafficking. Criminals will break into the country, you know, and come into the country without documentation. So are we saying that no laws make any sense anymore? We should just get rid of all the laws because criminals will always find a way around them? That's where we are?
Yeah, that's reductionist, and it's silly.
The Texas Democratic Party is apologizing for a tweet that linked the state's campus carry law to the arrest of a Texas Tech University student in the fatal shooting of a campus police officer. This was yesterday. He killed a cop on campus because in Texas, you can carry guns on campus. As news of the shooting was breaking yesterday, this is what the Texas Democrats' Twitter account posted. Allowing concealed guns on college campuses was a dumb and dangerous idea. Hey! Yeah, you're right. Don't apologize for saying that. That is exactly true. It referred to a law that took effect last year allowing Texans with concealed carry permits to bring guns into university classrooms and buildings. Now, okay, critics say that you have to be 21 to get a concealed carry permit, and the suspected Texas Tech shooter is 19. Okay, he didn't have the exact permit, didn't follow the rules, but you're setting up the culture. You're making it so people feel comfortable carrying guns around. Licensed or not, guns are normal. You're normalizing guns. You're normalizing this kind of thing. So that is why you see things like this happen in places like Texas, in places like Florida, places where guns are pervasive. More people carry them illegally and legally because they're everywhere and nobody really is checking. So don't apologize for the tweet. Keep criticizing. Instead, Texas Democratic Party Deputy Executive Director. My God, is that enough of a title? Texas Democratic Party Deputy Executive Director Manny Garcia said in a statement today that our words were inadequate, hurried, and we apologize. And the tweet has been removed. That's another thing. I don't think you should ever remove a tweet. Right. I think Twitter should make it so that when you tweet, it's permanent. I mean, you don't get to take back words in real... I mean, you can say, I take back what I said, but you still said it, you know? I still remember what you said.
No, you don't.
Yeah, I do.
Half the time you
What don't. If I told you I had a tape recorder that recorded it?
I would say this state requires two-party consent.
No, it doesn't.
It doesn't?
No, this is a one-party state.
Well, I had a 50% chance.
Oh, hell yeah. Okay, well, anyway. So not to make light of this story, obviously. This is just another symptom of the problem. You should not have guns on campus. Whether it's, you know, we fought against guns for campus security here for years. I think we finally lost that battle. But, you know, when you have guns, the discussion point then was if you have guns in the hands of law enforcement, you have guns in the hands of criminals by default, and it just gets to be more of an armed society. Ask people in London, you know, where most cops are not armed. You'll find that most criminals are not armed either. It's not a direct result, but it's because of the culture, because they say we don't want guns around us. And you'll find that in many countries, that there's crime, sure. There's stabbings, yes. But you don't have the kind of gun craziness that we have here on a daily basis.
Yeah, and the salient ways that is something that we care about, that's sort of it's mediated to us, whether it's in social settings or this nebulous fear of the intruder that you have to then, you know, start talking to your neighbors and comparing, you know, technical things and thinking that way. Mm-hmm. Or it's video games or other types of stimulus that are abjectly that contribute to sort of the normalization, which is something that we've been talking about.
Yeah, we talked about this last week, and we have to confront this, because people on the left tend to say, oh, it's not films, it's not video games. Yeah, it is. It is to a degree.
It contributes.
Now, you know, to forbid these things, no, that's not what I am for. That is what people on the right wing are for. They're for restricting what you can say and do and how you can express yourself. What I say is we take a good, honest look at ourselves and ask why. Why are we so fascinated with this? It comes back to the gun culture. We should not be so fascinated with blood and gore and violence. And we need to move away from that. You know, and just like, you know, if you're in a movie theater and somebody says something super homophobic, today I like to think the crowd will react to that. Maybe react against the film if the film itself is expressing those ideas, but certainly react against the character who said that. And I remember only a couple of decades ago here at Stony Brook, where a scene of a gay kiss resulted in the audience shouting out in disgust on a campus. That was how it was only a couple of decades ago. We have changed. We have evolved. And we can continue to evolve. We can reject the violence. We can reject the all the gunplay and the fascination with it. And if we did that with video games and films, I dare say we'd see less of it in the streets as well.
Yeah, and I'm not putting it squarely on that. I think that the majority of the responsibility lies with the industry, a la the NRA and the manufacturers themselves. They don't take enough responsibility for the damage that their product does. And we know from historical examples like the tobacco industry, they do find their way into places where their products are sold. It is in their interest to know how many guns are portrayed in so many movies in a year.
Yes.
They want to know, and they want those stories to be told, including police dramas, because it's about elevating police who are the bearers of arms, and you know, I think even some Second Amendment advocates would be with me on that, because it's always the affiliated or non-officers who are the bad guys, and you know, that portrayal, you don't see the, like, you know, harmless citizen with his gun. It's always someone up to no good, and that entire drama category in television is a fetishization of crime and crime serial drama and so on and so forth. But you know, the industry participates because they have all their other advertising going as well. They want to sell a product. Mm-hmm. And I think Dianne Feinstein made a really good distinction this week, and it's kind of along the lines of what you're saying. She was interviewed on Meet the Press and basically said that, like, we need to have the conversation, and in the sense that whenever we're talking about gun regulation, it's not an instant reaction of removing all guns from everyone. And for a very long time, and I think she's right, it has been that any conversation of any gun law is a slippery slope towards complete confiscation of all weapons in this country. That's got to stop. That is insanity, and that's what that industry wants you to buy. They want you to buy into this fear I mentioned. They want you to see the sexiness of it, Hollywood. They want you to buy as many products as you can.
Absolutely.
To be this collector crazy person.
That's the point, and I think we have to stop expecting responsibility. You know, the cigarette companies, they existed to sell cigarettes. And if you believe they cared about your health, you are incredibly naive. The gun manufacturers don't give a crap about safety, about regulations or any of that. They just want to sell guns. We have to realize that. And we have to decide, okay, you want to sell guns, this is how you're going to do it. It's basically, you know, we can't transfer to them social responsibility and expect them to take it seriously. We're the ones, our job as citizens, as elected officials, and you know, those people who are clamoring about how we need to respect law enforcement and our military, why don't you ask a cop? Why don't you ask a returning soldier if they want a country where weapons are pervasive, where you don't know who's carrying what, and where, you know, semi-automatic weapons are easily turned into automatic weapons. You know, the cops I know don't want people walking around with guns. They want more sanity. And if you really respect them and you really want to listen to what they have to say, listen to that, because they know what they're talking about.
Yeah, and it's important not to get dragged into this debate about whether the manufacturer, when talking about the manufacturers, to whether they are patriotic or not. Does it matter if a flag manufacturer cares about patriotism or the flag itself and what it represents? No, they exist to sell flags. They could be passionate about it, they could care about flags, but it's not a necessary part of that business, and it's not what they're for. Mm-hmm. They're there to sell more flags.
Well, they probably make
lots of flags. Yeah, they probably don't have an allegiance necessarily, or maybe they do have an allegiance, but they don't like the design. But the point is,
yeah, is there a company that just sells flags and nothing else?
Right. You wouldn't question whether a flag manufacturer is patriotic or not. You just want to know if the product works or doesn't, and you know, can they supply you or meet demand? Mm-hmm. And that's exactly what the manufacturers are doing. So when people start accusing any criticism of that industry as questioning the patriotism, and they want to, you know, get out that have some, you know, long yodel about you know, heritage and all this family stuff and what the flag stands for, just remember, it's a business.
Yes, a business that should take responsibility when they do something that's wrong. But again, you know, the people in charge of regulations and the citizens behind those people, they need to make the regulations into something strong. And you can't blame the companies when they basically use the rules as they exist now and take full advantage of them. That's what they're going to do. So don't be surprised. Okay, I want to move on to this other story. We only have a few minutes left, but this just infuriated me as well. I've been infuriated a lot this week. I'm sorry about that.
Don't apologize.
Well, do you remember Charlottesville? Not the weekend Charlottesville. There was another march in Charlottesville this weekend, if you can believe that.
Same Charlottesville?
Yeah, and same people. And
okay.
It's about 15 minutes long, which is about as long as it took for Twitter to announce it so that other people could start mobilizing, but then they took off.
Tiki torches?
Yeah. Yeah, they still had them.
Full torches, okay.
Absolutely.
All right.
And, let me just say for the record, there's a lot of talk again in the left about, oh, is it right to, attack Nazis? Yeah, it is. It is. Because you know why? You know, we're not just talking about an opinion, an ideology. We're talking about a call for genocide, for murder, glorifying things like that in the past. And I'll be damned if I'm going to stand by and just let somebody go around and advocate that kind of stuff. Because, you let people do that, they wind up doing that. So, yeah, punch a Nazi if you see a Nazi. I have no problem with that. And,
yeah, I just keep...
I'm nonviolent. I last time I punched somebody was in fifth grade. But, if we're under that kind of a threat, yeah, you have to react. You can't just hold a sign. These are evil people, and they will do evil if allowed to.
Under the guise of freedom, liberty, and all these sort of altruisms we'd like to think we represent, mm-hmm. But don't let it become something that's yet another co-opted belief system.
And the thing is that, people on the right are saying, oh my God, you're invading their freedom of speech. No, we're not. They still have freedom of speech. They can choose to come out and hold a Nazi flag and say Heil Hitler and all that kind of thing. The government's not telling them not to do that. But when you do that, there's going to be ramifications from your fellow citizens.
Yeah, don't be surprised when there's equal or greater speech directed back at you.
But here's something that really struck me from Charlottesville. Now, you might remember in August, this black guy was beaten mercilessly during the rally. That assault was captured on video and widely shared. Well, yesterday, an arrest warrant was issued for him, accusing him of the same felony offense. DeAndre Harris, who was beaten with a metal pipe and wooden boards by at least six men inside a parking garage on August 12th, and efforts to identify his assailants became a rallying cry on social media in the days after the Unite the Right rally. At least two men were identified. They were charged with malicious wounding. But right-wing critics portrayed Mr. Harris as the instigator. He started the fight with six people. His lawyer have been strongly denying this. But the warrant issued yesterday stems from a statement given by one of Mr. Harris's unnamed assailants, referred to in a police statement as the victim, to the authorities. The victim went to the magistrate's office, presented the facts of what occurred, and attempted to obtain the warrant. The magistrate requested that a detective respond and verify these facts. A Charlottesville Police Department detective did respond, verified the facts, and a warrant for unlawful wounding was issued. And that's a felony punishable by 1 to 5 years in prison. Now, what I like to know is, how does somebody verify this? The guy says he hit me first. What exactly do you do to verify? Is there some kind of camera footage? Because we haven't seen any camera footage.
Yeah, unless it's like something in the parking garage.
His lawyer is saying he participated in some of the jeering of the white supremacists in his city, letting them know they were not welcome here. He did not instigate any physical assault. That was done by the men carrying blunt objects and weapons. It's just unbelievable to me. And it reminds me, when I was a kid in fourth grade, right here in Port Jefferson, in fact, I was bullied mercilessly by kids on the bus. And I remember, I was just being hit by textbooks, boys, girls, you name it, everybody. It was just one of these ugly things that happens with mob violence on a fourth grade level. And I was, with my finger in the fog on the window, I just wrote a four-letter word with my finger. Somebody told the bus driver, and the bus driver said, oh, wow, okay, I got in trouble for that. Not one of the kids got in trouble. I got in trouble for that because the bus driver wanted to be in good with all the fourth graders and joined in the way that he could. This is the kind of thing that happens. This is what's happening in Charlottesville. Blaming the victim, blaming somebody that we saw getting beaten by six people and somehow saying that he was the instigator. This is the kind of craziness we're living in today.
It's important to be aware of the surroundings, record and Document, make notes, be like Comey or whomever.
Yeah. Yeah, make notes. Exactly. Take notes.
Don't misremember, you know, and don't let people manipulate the events, you know, as they occur. I mean, that's like pouring salt on the wound. Literally, you get beat up and then you have to defend yourself before you even get to litigate it or something.
And yesterday, EPA Administrator Scott Pruitt told coal miners in Kentucky the war against coal is over. Today, he said he'll be signing a proposed rule to withdraw the so-called Clean Power Plan of the past administration and thus begin the effort to withdraw that rule. Basically, trying to go back to the coal-fired days of the past, which we know are not coming back. Economically, it makes no sense, but these idiots are still planning to do this without regard to the environment or the economy or anything like that, instead of looking forward and retraining people for other jobs. It's just, it's so frustrating and sad to see this happen time and time again with so many different subjects. But, you know, the thing we have to remember is that our resistance is what keeps us strong, and we have to be persistently resistant. You know, that's the only way that we actually make progress. And if it annoys them, it's working.
Yeah, maintain that pressure. We're watching.
We sure are. And we want you to watch as well. We want you to write to us. OTW@2600.com is our email address.
We want to thank you for listening.
Yes, and again, write to us. We want to hear people's thoughts. Maybe we'll take phone calls next time.
Ideas,
suggestions, criticisms. We're open to all of it. But the thing to really remember and continue thinking about is your individual actions. Think them through. Realize that your voice matters. And they have an effect. And you can inspire others as well.
And have fun!
Don't forget to have fun. Good night, folks. See you next week.
This is a guided meditation on parenting. Take this time to breathe deeply and close your eyes. Right now, you're completely in control. Unlike the time you and your son played basketball and you attempted to slam dunk. Or when you tried removing those raccoons from the basement. Concentrate on the soothing sound of my voice. Release the memory of when you wrestled with that beehive in your son's treehouse. Let go of the time you thought that skunk was a cat, or when you pulled into the garage with your son's bike on top of the car. Deep breaths. Deep breaths.
You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. There are thousands of teens in foster care who don't need perfection. They need you. For more information on how you can adopt, visit AdoptUSKids.org. A public service announcement from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, AdoptUSKids, and the Ad Council.
If you thought an apple a day was enough to keep the doctor away, the National Cancer Institute has news for you. According to the latest research, eating 5 to 9 servings of fruits and vegetables a day will promote good health and reduce your risk of certain cancers, heart disease, high blood pressure, and diabetes. Remember to eat colorful fruits and vegetables, yellow, orange, red, green, blue, purple, and white. Eating 5 to 9 servings of colorful fruits and vegetables a day is easier than you think. Drink a glass of 100% fruit juice at breakfast. Add a banana to your cereal. Eat a large green salad at lunch. Snack on carrots and raisins. Grab an apple for the ride home. And eat spinach or broccoli with dinner. Get started today. You'll be eating 5 to 9 in no time. For more information, tips, and recipes, visit the 5-A-Day website at www.5aday.gov.
I will not pass gas in my house. I will not pass gas near my spouse. I will not pass gas in your face, because the gas I pass is worse than mace. A silent but deadly cloud of toxic waste. The end. Secondhand smoke contains hydrogen cyanide and other lethal gases. Don't pass gas. Take it outside. Get the facts at don'tpassgas.org. A message from the American Legacy Foundation and the Ad Council.
little man, the blue than you, I can see. Bit by bit, baby, your heart's a swimming girl. Listen, what you doing, baby? No, it ain't bad. I wonder what you're doing that I take so night now. Little boy, I'm losing you, I can see. Bit by bit, baby, you love them so with me. Let's go home this morning.
Thank you.
We are behind the eight ball. Hello, Ken. How are you?
Yeah.
You're in the master seat. You're in the master seat for a good
I'm in the master seat. The master seat tonight. The hot seat.
The hot seat.
Here we're here tonight filling in for Finn's Revolution again. We did two weeks ago.
Say goodbye to Emmanuel and Kyle.
Yes. Great show. Those guys, they have some great conversation there. How you doing, Joe?
I'm making it.
You're making it.
Yeah, I'm not gonna. Kenny, we got a gargantuan task in front of you, my brother.
Ah, you know, I love listening to music, and I can do it all night. And I guess that's what I'm gonna do.
You're gonna do it.
I'm gonna play it. I'm gonna listen to it. I'm gonna do whatever I can to make everybody out there have a good time and listen on with me. You know. Hope you like what I'm playing, because if you don't, too bad I'm still playing it.
you'll pick some good music, I'm sure.
I'll try. So, yesterday was John Lennon's birthday, and God rest his soul, passed away in 1980, of course, was murdered.
Right here in New York City, right?
My favorite song of all time is Imagine by John Lennon, because it just says so much, and it's really a shame that we can't find a way to follow his words, because what, you know, I mean, imagine, I mean, just imagine if the world was as peaceful as he professed it could be. And anyway, so,
you know, it's hard to imagine people not prescribing to that.
I'm telling you, it's hard to imagine why there's so much anger right now. But I know the reasons for it, but I don't understand why people can't find a way.
I don't want to get into the whole, like, they're trying to divide us, but sometimes it's easier to conquer when the community is divided.
Conquer.
And boy, we are divided right now.
Yes. So anyway, that being said, I want to open up with my favorite song, Imagine. So let me see. Let me make sure I got everything set up here right.
Take your time.
We got CD2 ready to go. So let's hear.
Listening to Emmanuel got me rolling.
Yeah. Let's hear Imagine.
Hard to do.
may say I'm a dreamer, but I'm not the only one. I hope someday you'll join us and the world will be one. Imagine no possessions. Imagine all.